hour of the show, we'll be talking with photographer, documentary filmmaker Lauren Greenfield. She spent a number of years interviewing girls and women for an exhibition of photographs called Girl Culture. And in large part, that work looked at how girls and women express themselves through their bodies. How, in the words of our guest, they make their bodies into all-encompassing projects. Now, in some cases, if we're talking about makeup and fashion, these things can be benign. But there are other things that can truly be deadly. She now has made a documentary that's being shown on HBO, and it had its premiere this week. And if you have access to HBO, you can see it. It will be shown a number of times between now and the end of the year. A documentary titled Thin, which takes a look at the experiences of women who are struggling with eating disorders. And it's all focused on women who live at one of the country's most highly respected eating disorder treatment facilities. There also is a companion book. So even if you don't have HBO or can't see HBO and you're interested, you can look for this book. And it has the same title. The book is Thin. And it is very moving and in some cases very disturbing. But I would certainly recommend to people to take a look at it. Questions are welcome this morning as we talk with Lauren Greenfield. Here in Champaign-Urbana, the number is 333-9455. We do also have a toll-free line that's good anywhere that you can hear us, and that is 800-222-9455. At any point here, if you're interested in joining in the conversation, you have questions, comments, you're certainly welcome to do that. Ms. Greenfield, hello.
Hi.
Thanks for talking with us.
No, thanks for having me.
We certainly appreciate it. Perhaps I would have you talk a little bit first about girl culture and what you were interested in doing with that, a little bit about that project, because then, in fact, Thin grows out of that. But maybe we'll take a step back and just talk about your interest in women and their body images and how they think about their bodies and the kinds of things that they do with them.
Well, Girl Culture was a project that was really important to me. It was a kind of personal labor of love where I spent 5 years crisscrossing the United States, photographing girls and women in many different kinds of situations, from little girls to grown women, looking at how the body has become this primary expression of identity and how we express so many things that are going on with ourselves and also within society and the kinds of conflicting messages that are coming to girls on our bodies. I was very influenced by Joan Brumberg's book, The Body Project, and she looked at how, in the absence of less structure from families and traditional institutions, girls are more vulnerable to peer pressure and media pressures and make their bodies into these all-encompassing projects. And like you mentioned, the projects that I documented were from the kind of everyday and seemingly innocuous ones like fashion and makeup and grooming, to the most self-destructive ones, including self-harm, promiscuity, and eating disorders. And when after the book came out, there was a museum show which traveled the country. It's now been seen by over 500,000 people. And what I saw when the Girl Culture Museum show would go to places was that it seemed to really tap into something very raw and real in communities all over the country about what was going on with girls today and the kind of self-esteem crisis. And it just seemed like this was something that girls and women and parents, dads too, wanted to talk about. And so I felt like there was more for me to do there and started thinking about making my first film, since my photography had always been very narrative, and ended up deciding to make a film about eating disorders because eating disorders are the most pathological and most self-destructive body project that we have and are a very extreme example, dramatic example of how girls use their bodies as their voices. Mm-hmm. And that was how the Thin project began. And it began with a film and then I made a book.
Yeah. And this, the film and book really all centers around this place. This is the Renfrew Center. It's in Florida, which is a residential treatment facility, and apparently it's well thought of as a place where women can try to go to get help.
It is. It's one of the biggest, one of the most well-known, and they have treated many, many women. And in some ways, this was a very specific project because I spent a lot of time in one facility, and in the film, focus on four women. And when I started the project, I thought this was going to be kind of a look at quite a marginal illness, that this was really kind of the most pathological, that seemed to have symbolic importance because of the emphasis on bodies in our culture, but that it was a kind of a marginal project. What I discovered as I kind of got into this world is that, first of all, 1 in 7 young women are affected. 1 in 7 women under 25 have or have had an eating disorder, which really was quite shocking to me to discover that statistic. And the other thing is, it just seemed like in my journey, there were few people that I met, whether it was random people on the street to people on my own crew or in my office or kind of on this journey, it seemed like almost everyone had some kind of personal connection to this illness, whether it was a daughter, a sister, their girlfriend, themselves in the past. And that really made me feel that this was something important to focus on, and that's why I kind of stayed with it beyond the film.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I'm over the years, I'm sure that I have talked with people about the subject of eating disorders, various kinds of psychologists and counselors. And in fact, Joan Jacobs-Brumberg has been on this program, and we talked about the Body Project. So, you know, it's something that I know I've had some conversations about. But I have to say that until I looked at the photographs in the book, I guess I would say, I even that I had done that, I would say, I don't know anything about this at all. Because the kind of impact that the images, the pictures of this woman have, it is so, so heartbreaking, so upsetting, that I don't think anything that I had read about this before would have prepared me for, you know, meeting in a sense face to face with these women. Now, that's maybe not true in all cases. Every person is an individual, and there are some of these women that you would look at them and just looking at them, you wouldn't think that there was anything obviously going on. They would look okay.
Well, that's important for people to understand too. In fact, one of the women who was at the clinic when I was there just wrote to me yesterday about how important that is to understand that eating disorders do come in all shapes and sizes. We have tend to stereotype them as the Caucasian middle class or upper middle class adolescent who is skeletal. Mm-hmm. And many of the bulimics who are doing devastating damage to their bodies are not underweight. You even see women who are overweight in the clinic. It's a psychological, very serious mental illness, and it expresses itself in all different ways. And so there are probably a lot more eating disorders around us than we realize because, as you said, many of the women look normal body weight. They're also very successful in a lot of ways. It's not our normal stereotype of someone who is in the grip of mental illness. A lot of these women have jobs, they have degrees, they've had a fair amount of success in their life. In the movie, you see intelligent, articulate women telling their stories, and so I think that's another thing that is surprising.
Let me just very quickly introduce again our guest for this hour. We're talking with documentary filmmaker and photographer Lauren Greenfield. She is the director of a new film documentary. This was your first film documentary, is that?
That's right.
Right? Okay. First documentary that it just premiered this week on HBO. And as I said at the beginning, if you have access to HBO, it will air a number of times between now and the end of the year. So there will be some opportunities to see it. There is a companion book, and both the film and the book have the same title. The title is Thin. And also the book contains some contribution here from Joan Jacobs-Brumberg, who's professor at Cornell. where she teaches history and human development and women's studies, and she is a contributor as well. So you might want to seek out the book published by Chronicle, and also there will be opportunities for a lot of people, I'm sure, listening to us to see the documentary on HBO. It has been shown at a number of festivals and also won several awards. Questions are welcome here, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Before you went to Renfrew, and so you spent time as a part of doing this project, had you really known anyone who was experiencing severe eating disorders? Had you ever met anybody like that before?
Not in a very intimate way. I mean, I certainly had seen people in my high school and my college. I had photographed it a little bit. I originally went to Renfrew for Time magazine in 97, and I went back there to photograph for Girl Culture. So I had spent a little bit of time in that world and got to know a few people. But I had the same experience that you just mentioned, that even with this knowledge, I still kind of came out of it feeling like before this project, I really didn't understand anything about this illness. These women are very sick, and what you see in the film is how tenacious the illness is and how difficult it is to treat. And I think that most of us, what we have understood from the media and other shows is a little bit more of a kind of superficial and almost glamorized depiction of this illness, and that the causes are more, I think we tend to think of it as something associated with popular culture and people wanting to look like the models that they see in magazines. And certainly I think those media pressures are very real and are very triggering and are part of the reason why we're seeing such great numbers of eating disorders now. But that's certainly not the whole story.
Well, that's certainly a point that I want to come to, because I think any time you have this kind of a conversation, you really do have to talk about the effect of images of women in popular culture and the kind of effect that has on women and girls as they look at those images and they look at themselves, and that we judge women very harshly. We hold them to this very high, and I'm sure some people would say, unhealthy and unrealistic standard of what they're supposed to look like. So that's something that operates, and you have to acknowledge that fact. But at the same time, as you say here, the women that you're talking about here in this project that you came to know, this eating disorder at this level, this is a severe mental illness. So it's sort of, I'm not exactly sure what the connections are. And how much that the popular culture view of women in the ideal body affects these women. I'm sure that it has something to do with it, but in a sense, it's almost a separate kind of, you have to separate that out.
Right. Well, in Girl Culture, I looked at kind of the mainstream culture and how important and vivid these pressures are for girls and how they do contribute very profoundly to the self-esteem crisis going on now, I think, with girls in this country. But what it seems to me that this media culture has created is a culture where almost everyone has dieted. I mean, everyone has had these body obsessions at some point in their life. And as you suggested, not everyone develops a bona fide eating disorder. And, of course, what I was filming is residential treatment, which in some ways is the place for the sickest of the sick, because most of those women have tried an outpatient treatment center or counseling before they get to the point of inpatient treatment, which is a big commitment. Without insurance, it can cost up to $1,500 a day. So it is for people who are really struggling with a bona fide eating disorder. And I think the media pressures have contributed to this epidemic because they're very triggering. And one thing that Joan Brumberg said in her introduction to the book is that psychopathologies come and go, but they always say something about the historical time in which they're produced. And I think that's one thing that really interested me, is why are we seeing such great numbers of this now? Eating disorders in many ways are not about food and not even about body image, although that's a big symptom of it, but they're really a coping mechanism that women use to numb out intolerable emotional pain. And in some ways, similar to drug addiction or alcoholism. And I think that we are seeing this expressed on the body because of our obsession with that in our day and age.
Yeah. Well, I think you make an important point, and I think you make it in your introduction to the book, where you talk about women who have these very severe eating disorders. The kind of self-destructive aspect of this is it's a form of suicide. It just may be a little slower, but that in fact there is this apparent need for drive for them to hurt themselves, and in a way it's not that we would think, oh well, they somehow have this idea that they'll look better and that they'll be happier and they'll be more popular and they'll be more accepted.
That's right.
That it's not that we're not talking about that. We're talking about something that's akin to, you know, taking a knife and cutting yourself.
Right. And when in the personal testimonies in the book, there are a few examples of somebody saying, well, I wanted to look better. There are more stories where somebody said, well, I was abused as a child and I wanted to become invisible. I didn't feel like I deserved to take up space. Women who might say they want to be thin, but then thin is never good enough. And they know. I mean, Elisa is one of the four main characters in the film, and then I follow her story over a couple of years in the book, and she's a successful, articulate woman. She was a successful pharmaceutical rep and has raised two beautiful children. By all objective standards, she's a beautiful, thin woman. And yet she says, I've tried in my life to get satisfaction from other accomplishments like my job and my children, but nothing measures up to this goal of being thin. And she says, if it takes dying to get there, so be it. Well, of course, that's a completely irrational statement from someone who seems otherwise rational. And I think that's why, you know, that's when the mental illness becomes so apparent.
We have a caller to bring into the conversation. Let's do that. Someone who is listening in Champaign on our line number one. Hello.
Hi. Can mm-hmm. you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. I'm finding this very interesting because I've had anorexia and as a middle schooler. And in 78, before really anybody got on the band and understood what was going on, the first article in Life magazine, the cover was of an anorexic. It was like just the dawning of figuring out what this is, you know. So a couple things I wanted to ask her. So I've been what I consider an eating disorder my whole life. I'm healthy now. I'm 41. But in middle school at that age, we didn't have the nutritional knowledge that we do now, so less was more. So as you starved yourself, you know, they always said less. We didn't know the things that we know nowadays. And by the time what started out as I'm overweight and people, your family and your church and your school are applauding you for losing weight, by the time they catch up with the idea that you're way in it, that you're too thin, the disease has been going on for months. So by the time they start going, wait a minute, stop, I mean, you have a different thought process by then. So did she find that with the other women?
I definitely did. I mean, I think that's what's so, I think that's in ways why this illness is so insidious, is because a lot of the women talk about when they started, they were applauded by their friends and family. And it's the symptoms of this illness look strangely familiar to all of us, and they are normative behavior in our culture, which is dieting. It's actually sanctioned behavior. And so what you're saying is exactly what a lot of women have told me, was that, you know, they began this as a diet, and especially for the women, there were a fair amount of women in the book and the film who were considered overweight as kids and got made fun of, and this was a point of kind of humiliation for them. And one girl in the book, Stephanie, says, I never wanted to endure this again. So she started her diet and, like you said, got applauded for it. And, of course, at a certain point, you go beyond the acceptable point, and then everyone is kind of condemning you for it, and by that point, you're kind of in the grasp of the eating disorder, and it is like an addiction, and that once you're in it, and once you kind of feel that that process and some of the chemical effects that go with it, it's very, very difficult to get out of. And what the doctors in the book who contribute to the book say is that professional help is really the only way to
exactly. I still say that it becomes a chemical imbalance, and I don't see how anyone who is deep in the throes of it can get out of it without some type of antidepressant. What did you find with your women? Did they all get some type of medication?
Well, I mean, first of all, I should say that I'm not a medical expert. I'm a documentarian, so I spent a lot of time there and I observe people, but I'm not an expert from the medical side. But I can say that at the place where I filmed, the Renfrew Center, psychotropic medication and psychiatric care with medication is a big part of treatment. And I think my understanding is that that is something that is relatively new, and that one of our consultants on the film had been a patient at Renfrew more than 10 years ago, and at that time the medication wasn't as widely used. And now, yes, it's hard to find. I don't think I can remember. Maybe I met one patient who wasn't on some kind of medication, but it seems like almost everyone is also being treated with medication in addition to therapy.
And it seems that needs to be more widely. Let's say if you're depressed now and you take an antidepressant, people understand that. But if you have an eating disorder and you need medication for that, it's more stigmatized. And so that information, I think, needs to get out there that, you know, this process of healing is one that where these women had to take medication, and it, you know, balances them, makes them better. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, and that definitely comes through in the book and in the film. A lot of women talk about medication. And I think you're right that there is this kind of misunderstanding in the public that this is an illness of choice. Sometimes in my journey, I found that people did not feel sympathetic for women with eating disorders. I think
right.
They do feel sympathetic after they read these stories and after they see the film, but I think a lot of people are under a misguided impression that this is somehow
a choice.
And
that you're seeking attention.
Yeah, that someone can just kind of snap out of it. And sometimes people's own families, you know, get so frustrated, and you hear women talking about, you know, someone in their family saying, like, what's the big deal? Just eat a hamburger, just eat a Snickers bar. And it's very frustrating to them that they don't understand how deep and deep-rooted the illness is. And, I mean, I think that that's one reason why the women chose to participate in this film. Shelley, who is in one of the main characters in the film, who I filmed from her very first day of treatment to her last day 6 months later, said on her first day of treatment, her therapist said, why have you agreed to be filmed during your treatment? And she said, well, I want people to know what it's really like to have an eating disorder. And her therapist pressed her, and he said, well, who do you want to know? And she said, my dad. And I think there is a sense that even people who have lived close with them and love them for many, many years don't have the foggiest idea what they're going through.
Oh, that's absolutely true. And especially in the time when I grew up, there was so much less information available that it was, well, just put some butter on your green beans and be quiet, you know? So I thank you and applaud you for bringing this to light, and I appreciate it.
All right, well,
thank you very much.
Call. Other calls are welcome, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Our guest is Lauren Greenfield. She's a documentary photographer and filmmaker. Her documentary, Thin, this week premiered on HBO, also been shown at a number of film festivals and has won some awards, and will be shown a number of times on various channels of HBO. So if you have access, there are some opportunities for you to see it between now and the end of the year. There is a companion book titled Thin, which is also out now, and that you can certainly find in a bookstore near you. Chronicle Books is the publisher. Questions, again, welcome, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. For women who have severe eating disorders, the kind of women that you met in a profile in the book, what's the prognosis? What's the prospects for them to recover? And is this something that, in a sense, you really never get you never get over completely at something that you end up having to live with. It's a part of you, and it's always going to be a part of you.
You know, that's hard for me to say because I have followed the women for 2.5 years at this point.
Okay.
Yes. And it's certainly with them all now, although some of them are in various stages of recovery. I think the caller who just called sounded like she was over it. You know, it seems like what one expert told me is that it takes 4 to 7 years to truly recover from an eating disorder. And I think, you know, you can get beyond it, but it's very tenacious illness and a very high rate of recidivism. I mean, part of the reason I think we see so much recidivism is that our treatment is woefully inadequate in the sense that and as I said, an expert said 4 to 7 years is what it takes, and the average insurance plan in the U.S. covers 3 weeks of residential treatment. And so what you would see in the clinic and what you see in the film is women starting to get better from treatment and starting going through the refeeding process, maybe getting up to a healthy weight, and just when they're ready to, their minds are functioning again and they're ready to start working on the underlying emotional issues, that's when insurance says, okay, you're at a healthy weight, you can leave now. And then, of course, they go out to the same triggering lifestyles, and then they end up back in. And I certainly saw a revolving door in the clinic while I was there. That said, you know, people do get better. Elisa, who is in the film, has been in a solid recovery for over a year. Your caller recovered, so it's definitely possible to get better with professional help, but it's a long road.
Mm-hmm. There, I think it's certainly true of some variety of emotional psychiatric conditions that sometimes people can be pretty good at hiding them and that people around them may not, in fact, know. Now, if someone in your life looked like some of the women in this book, I would think there's no way that you could not know. But that makes me wonder about this very issue. And again, it goes back to what some of the things that the caller said and some of the things that you said about maybe there are people in these women's lives, could be parents, friends, other family members who really don't know that something serious is going on. Now, maybe a point comes when you have to say, now, how could you not know? But is it the case that at least for some period of time as these conditions develop, in fact, that these women are really pretty good at hiding it?
Definitely. I mean, the caller pointed to that in saying that, you know, people in her life were applauding her, and by the time they started to realize that she had a problem, she was too in the thick of it to get out. And definitely the professionals have told me that the earlier you catch this, the higher your chance of recovery. And HBO has also done an educational guide, and there's more information at the website, thindocumentary.com, to help parents and friends or sufferers themselves identify whether or not they have an eating disorder. And to your point about secrecy, these women would be the first to admit that they are masters of manipulation and that secrets and lies are a very big part of this illness. And most of these women have been hiding it for years. And you see that in the film with some of the rule breaking and some of the things that they do that are against the rules.
As a documentary maker, I know you go into it. One goes into it with the idea that there's a certain story that you want to tell. And that you, to tell the story, what you've got to have is your subjects tell the story. You want to have that as much as, I suppose, the ideal documentary. I kind of think the ideal documentary is one where there's no voiceover at all, where the story almost tells itself, and you can get your subjects actually to tell you the story. Now, in a case like this, you're relying on people to open up to you, and I'm sure to talk about things that are very difficult and things that they have kept hidden for such a long time. I wonder how you think about this as you're going along, the idea that to tell the story that you want to tell, you've got to have people give it to you. But on the other hand, you know, what they're opening up to you, some really raw stuff that must be hard just to see, first of all, and then when you're thinking about the fact that you're going to put this down on film and a lot of people are going to see it, that you're also exposing them and all of this really raw stuff to the world. Now, they're, in a sense, they're allowing you to do that, but how do you think about that?
Well, I mean, first of all, the women in the film share very, very personal and intimate moments of their life, and by extension, so do their families. And so, first of all, I want to just recognize their bravery and generosity in doing so. I mean, I think they did that with the idea that maybe it could help somebody else, that maybe it would help people in their lives understand what this illness is like. And I think they're proud of what they contributed, but it's also hard sometimes to have the whole world kind of see them in such a, as you said, such a raw state. When we went in, we actually tried something even more ambitious than, you know, what you mentioned in terms of getting people to open up and tell their own stories, and that I wanted to do a cinema verite documentary with life unfolding in front of you. So not only no commentary, but really no, I mean, not only no voiceover, but really not even any interviews, just being there like a fly on the wall in therapy sessions, in weigh-ins, in girls' dormitory rooms, and to have the story tell itself that way, which is almost the way we're used to looking at a dramatic feature. Mm. And, I mean, I went in very, very open-minded in the sense that I did not have a story that I wanted to tell. I had never made a film before. I had no idea what the story was going to look like. It was very different from the way I might work for a magazine as a photojournalist, where I kind of know what my story was. I went in there to explore what it's like to be in treatment in this institution and hopefully get to know the women and understand eating disorders better as a result, but I did not have any kind of thesis or story or, you know, place trajectory.
How much time?
I didn't even know what structure it would be. I didn't even know how many characters there would be. There was nothing written. And we spent 10 weeks shooting over a 6-month period. Mm. And during the 10 weeks, we practically lived there. Sometimes we were there 12, 14, 16 hour days. And we stayed in a hotel, but we also had a room there. So occasionally I would spend the night if I felt like things were unfolding that we needed to be sensitive to or we needed to witness. We had a small all-female crew. There were 4 of us. And sometimes when the crew had to go home to sleep, sometimes my cinematographer, Amanda McKaylee, also taught me how to use video camera, and I became second camera and shot one-man band when the crew wasn't there. So we really became a part of the community in a very intimate way and a part of these women's lives. And I think that's why eventually they were able to get back to their work in therapy and their work in treatment without being so conscious of the camera.
Mm. How long is the finished product?
It's an hour and 42 minutes.
An hour and 42. And how much did you shoot altogether? Have any
Over
idea?
Over 200 hours.
Wow. That must have been a real tough editing job.
It was, but I worked with a brilliant editor, Kate Amend. I mean, this was my first film, but I had 2 amazing partners, my cinematographer, Amanda McKaylee, and my editor, Kate Amend. And I think, you know, working with Kate, she really made sense of the footage. That said, things did unfold in a chronological way, in a way our structure was established chronologically, and also the story really did unfold in the field. You know, sometimes you hear about documentaries that are created really in the editing room. This wasn't like that. The main women in the film are so charismatic and so strong that their stories swept us away and became the structure of the film. And so it really did kind of happen in the field and in the editing room. We just had to kind of keep peeling away the onion to make the story tighter and tighter.
Yeah. Our guest is Lauren Greenfield. She's a documentary filmmaker and photographer. Her most recent project, film and book, Thin. The film is now being shown on HBO, and the book, certainly you can find in the bookstore. It's published by Chronicle Books, and it profiles a number of women who are being treated for eating disorders at a place called the Renfrew Center. It's in Florida, and it's very well thought of as a place and an inpatient facility for treatment of women with severe eating disorders. Questions are welcome. We have somebody here who's been waiting patiently, and we'll get right to them in Champaign on line one. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
As somebody who deals with her own obsessions, I think it's incredibly brave what your participants were willing to do, and you know, it's like how do you say thank you to those four women for what they gave to the rest of us. I know that you're not a medical person, but when you talked about the chemical imbalance that dieting and then going back and eating and dieting and eating, could you be more clear about that? Well, I was walking in and out of the house, so I'm not sure I always heard
Well, in some ways, I think that part is better addressed by a medical expert. But from what I understand, there's an endorphin, and that's like a high from the starvation or for bulimics from the bulimia, and that it becomes a very addictive process, and even a physiologically and it seems chemically addictive process. I just wanted to say what you were saying in terms of saying thank you to the women. I mean, I agree with you and you know, thank them so deeply from my perspective. But on the website, thindocumentary.com, there's a forum. And if you want to say anything, you know, to the girls, they have been kind of listening to the press and are active in this process in terms of, you know, sometimes writing back to people, too. And I think, you know, now is a moment that I think they feel really proud of their participation, but it is also a big thing to kind of put your life out there. So if you want to say anything to them or any kind of appreciation, you can write it on the Thin Forum.
And what is the, is it a website?
It's a website, thindocumentary.com.
Just a minute, please. I'd like to write that down. T-H-I-N.
T-H-I-N. Mm-hmm. Documentary.
All one
spaces.
Word?
Yes. Dot com.
Documentary.
And on the website, there are also resources if there's anyone out there who needs help or knows someone who might need help, and there's an educational guide.
Great.
And there's also a lot of information about the project, so if you don't have HBO, if you if you can't afford the book, there's a lot of information on the website.
It sounds like this sort of grew and grew and grew in terms of the documentary and then the book, and thank you for the whole process that you have gone through.
Oh, thank you very much. There's also going to be, I'm working now on creating a museum exhibition, which is going to open in February at the Women's Museum in Dallas and tour the country for several years. So hopefully that will make it to Illinois. But I found that the museum is the place, at least with girl culture, which was really where the rubber meets the road in terms of bringing young people in to interact with the book, that young people are not always out there buying coffee table books in bookstores or don't necessarily have a subscription to HBO, and the museum is a place where educators and parents and young people can interact with the work in a way that's open and accessible to the public. And then the website is there to support that as well.
My last question is, I have a 12-year-old granddaughter who, when she was 9 years old, said, "Oh, I'm so fat, I outgrew my jeans." And I want to say, "Honey, you're not fat, you're growing." Can a 12-year-old read this book?
That's a hard question, and I feel like, you know, for every parent or family member, you need to review it first and decide whether it's appropriate for your child. There is a lot of graphic detail about what this illness is like, and I think probably if you're talking about a child who has never had any exposure to an eating disorder, it might not be appropriate. The educational guide is geared towards high school and college age, but for middle school, there are a lot of middle school age girls who are dealing with this issue. And I think if they're already dealing with it, it's important to have some good education about it. But it might be more appropriate for the parent than for the child.
Okay.
And again, the film also is a very sad, kind of tough experience and not necessarily or not appropriate for children.
So the film would not be appropriate for a 12-year-old.
I mean, I feel like in middle school, every kid is different, and so. I would certainly recommend that the parent preview it first. It was interesting because with Girl Culture, when I did that, that was really intended for high school and college age women and men, and as was the educational curriculum that went alongside that. And when I started to visit museums, so many parents told me that they brought their middle school children, and I asked them, you know, if they felt that that was appropriate, and they said that they felt that their middle school age children were exposed to all of the things and the pictures already, and so they wanted them to see it in a constructive context. So, I mean, I think it is an individual thing, but it's definitely something that should not be done without a preview and a lot of thought about whether it's appropriate. And if it's someone who's actually suffering from an eating disorder, then, you know, maybe not without the consultation of their therapist.
So do you have also written another book called Girl Culture?
Yes, a book called Girl Culture, and my first book was called Fast Forward, and they both really deal with kind of growing up quickly in the media-saturated culture, and then Girl Culture looks at how girls and women all over America are affected by these media pressures and how the body has become their primary source of primary expression of identity and how girls make their bodies into projects.
And it's called Girl Culture.
That's correct.
And your first book was?
Fast Forward.
Fast Forward. Okay, and your name is Greenfield.
Yes, and if you look at the website, laurengreenfield.com, all of the books and information is there.
Thank you very much.
All right, thanks for the call. And again, we have about 5 minutes left. Our guest is Lauren Greenfield, photographer, documentary filmmaker. Her film, Thin, now being shown on HBO, and the book that is a companion is out in bookstores now.
I did want to mention, if you don't have HBO, that the DVD will be available in a week.
Oh, all right. That soon, huh? Okay, good. Well, because the film actually, I guess, has been shown. It was shown at some festivals and so forth. So, well, that's good that if people really want to see it, they don't have to have HBO or find somebody who does so that they can see it. We've been talking in really general terms, I know. One of the things that I might ask you to talk just a little bit about is we've mentioned the fact that the film profiles four women in particular, and there are more women in the book, but they're all women who are being treated at this place, the Renfrew Center, where they specialize in trying to work with women who have severe eating disorders. Is it possible to talk a little bit in general terms, and I'm sure every person is different, but in a little bit in general terms about what it is exactly they do? What does the therapy consist of?
What is the therapy at Renfrew?
Yeah.
They use all different kinds of therapy, individual therapy, one-on-one with a therapist, group therapy, many different kinds of group therapy, some that's experiential, some that is meal therapy, where they would all eat a meal together with a therapist and discuss their feelings. They also use art therapy, dance therapy, medication, as we talked about before, one-on-one meetings with psychiatrists, with psychologists, and then the whole team works together to kind of bring together all of the different sides of the treatment, and so you see that in the film too, the whole team talking about progress or lack of progress. There's, I don't know if I mentioned family therapy, which you do see in the film, and some of the kinds of therapies that you don't see in the film because, as I mentioned, we edited over 200 hours of film into a less than two-hour movie. There's some additional therapies that you can see on the website in the extra scenes to get kind of a fuller picture of what therapy is like. But they use many, many different kinds. This is a residential facility, so you're eating all of your meals there. Of course, the meals are an important part of the process, and everyone has a meal plan where they are obliged to eat certain things. You're obliged to eat 100% of your meal, and if you don't, there can be consequences like having to drink a high-calorie drink. And so the food is carefully monitored, as are the women's activities like exercise.
Yeah, it's maybe difficult to understand that when you see some of these pictures of women, particularly the pictures where they're eating, that the whole business of food and eating should be a source of such unhappiness. I'm thinking about there's a picture here where there are a number of women who are sitting around a table. A big table, and there's a box of Pop-Tarts, and it's right in the here's this one photograph. It's right in the foreground, and they're looking at it like, I don't know what, like it would attack them, like it's the most vile thing that they could possibly imagine, or that maybe they're afraid of it.
That's exactly right there, and I'm glad that you got that from the picture, because that's what I was trying to show, was this really intense fear of food, and that is a therapy session. That picture is of a therapy session where the women have to eat what they call a fear food. So it could be Pop-Tarts, it could be a donut, it could be a Snickers bar. And basically, as the therapy, they have to eat the entire portion and then talk about what that was like. And some people say, you know, have said to me, well, why would an institution force them to eat junk food? I mean, shouldn't they be feeding them nutritious food? But I think it's exactly to the point that you brought up. It's not saying that you should eat a Pop-Tart every day or eat a Snickers bar every day, but it is saying that if you eat that, it's not going to kill you. You're not going to explode. You're not going to go up three sizes. That everyone can, eat these kinds of foods from time to time, and it's okay. And they are dealing with that incredible fear around food, which I think is actually not limited to women with eating disorders. I think, you know, I said 1 in 7 women have an eating disorder, but many more have what they call disordered eating and obsession about food and body image. And so I think, you know, all of us have our fear foods. And certainly when we were making the film, the crew and everyone, you know, who had interaction with this facility got in touch with their own fears about eating and their own body obsessions.
Hmm. Did this have an effect like that on you personally?
I mean, I've never had an eating disorder, and I don't want to kind of trivialize in any way what these women are going through, but I certainly feel that as a woman, I've had my own body image obsessions, and girl culture was very much a autobiographical in kind of where the passion and motivation for that project came from in terms of me remembering my own diets and kind of in high school desire to fit in and be in the popular crowd and have the right clothes and that sort of thing. And so I think as a woman, I could identify with obsessing over body image and having, you know, a fear food or things like that, but I've never had an actual eating disorder.
Yeah. It does, I'm sure, and I guess I know this from having one of the interviews that I've read that you did talking about this, that after having this experience, you can't now just go out and walk down the street and not. It causes you to look at people differently. I'm sure that there's no way that it would not cause you to look at people differently.
Well, I think I'm more sensitized to the signs and symptoms of an eating disorder, and I also know, I also understand much more how common it is. So, like you said, the women are not all skeletal. They're not all the way, you know, we think and or we have thought or we have stereotyped women with eating disorders, and so it is much more all around us than I think we usually realize. I mean, the big motivation for me in doing the book was that the film, in the end, only tells the stories of four women. And I felt that there was more stories that needed to be told about the diversity of who gets an eating disorder. That in the book, it goes from adolescents to women in their 40s and 50s. There are women of color, African-American women, Puerto Rican women, women from different socioeconomic backgrounds, women with different bodies. There's one woman who's an emotional eater who would be considered obese. So it does take many forms. And when you're in the clinic, you see that it's not just restricting your food, anorexia, but it's also bulimia, purging your food. It's also emotional eating. It can take form as laxative abuse or exercise abuse. There are many, many forms this illness can take.
Well, we're at the point here that we're going to have to stop. I do, again, want to mention for people, however, that the work that we've been talking about, you certainly can see it. The film, Thin, is being shown now on HBO and will be shown a number of times. We've seen now in the end of the year. As Lauren Greenfield said, soon there will be a DVD available. So if you're interested in watching her documentary, you can see it that way. There is a companion book, which is titled Thin, which will be available in a bookstore, should be right now, published by Chronicle Books. And then if you're interested in more, finding out more about both of these projects and about some of her work, you can also go to the website www.laurengreenfield.com see that there. Ms. Greenfield, we just want to say to you, thanks very much for giving us some of your time.